The Wind Trust Business Lunch on WGN Radio. Producer Pete Zimmerman and I asked Stephen Esposito to join us, the president of Yellowstone Wealth Management in Lake Forest. Stephen, welcome back.
Thank you, John, for having me.
Are you surprised that the market is giving back half so far of what it gained yesterday?
I would say more of a disappointment that it's doing it, but we're in choppy waters right now, and we're a lot of uncertain times, and that's what's causing it. It's fighting with itself as to where to go right now. So I think this is mostly emotion and algorithms more than anything else, John.
Was it algorithms that caused the market slide to begin with?
It sure helped it. If it didn't start it, it sure threw gasoline on the fire. I just don't see a lot of investors running and getting out of portfolios and trading like this. But, you know, it's a double-edged sword. It's great on the way up, and it's not so good on the way down. I think it just exaggerates the moves, which really, you know, gives you an upset stomach going forward.
Maybe that's what happened yesterday, exaggerated the move, that is. But it did seem to be not just, a blip in the news. It seemed to be a seismic change in the position. The bond market was maybe rescued, and the tariffs were paused. So that's something, right?
Yeah, and for some reason, they're forgetting about that today. I just don't think the markets like uncertainty. And right now, they're not really, can't get their hand around what's going to happen. But I think people should take three steps backward, take a deep breath, and just look at it from a different perspective, looking out a year or two rather than looking out a day or two. And I think you'll do very well in this market. There's so many cheap stocks, and I think some of it's way overdone. I mean, way overdone.
I'll ask you about that again in a second. Yesterday on the Mincing Rascals podcast, I said that the 90-day pause, I'm not sure if it's a feature or a bug. That is, it gives us time to recalibrate, but it also just prolongs the uncertainty of what we're going to do here. And I wonder if that's what the market is telling us today.
I would absolutely agree with you. But I think I would take the glasses half full rather than the glasses half empty. We know that they're going to be more measured as they approach it, which is what you want. So the question is, what is it going to be when it's all said and done? And if there is a surprise to the upside where it's going to be not as bad as everybody thought, you could see a dramatic rally, a barn burner to the upside. But we'll see. We don't know yet. But I still think investors need to stay calm and look for some ridiculous opportunities in this market. There's really some bargains out here.
Like what?
It's just looking at the whole thing. There's pretty much everything has been hit. They're taking no prisoners right now.
How about a good old fashioned index fund?
Yeah, you could do that too. I think on the individual stock side, you might be able to, pick some better targets, so to speak. Go for some dividends. I like getting dividends when we can for our portfolios just to assist it in performance. But, there's so many companies under the P ratio of 10 or 12 right now on forward numbers. And if you look at a 10-year treasury, right now the P ratio on a 10-year treasury is around 23. So if you can go in there and find some multiples of between 8 and 14, 8 and 15, and get yourself a 2 or 3 or 4% dividend to boot, I think you've got the risk reward is now on your side. And that's what we're doing. That's what we're looking to do is deploy capital when markets are down. That's my favorite time to deploy capital, when markets are down.
I understand that you can't give specific stock recommendations, but you mentioned dividend-paying stocks. What sectors in general do you like? Is it energy? Is it banking? Who's got the bigger upside right now?
My answer is yes. You look at just about anything. You look at healthcare. You look across the spectrum. You'll find out they've taken no prisoners in this market. Some of your favorite tech names are just been decimated, 30, 40, 50% drops from just 9 months ago. So either the technology and the value of the future that was greatly exaggerated, or maybe the downturn is greatly exaggerated. Some stalwarts, names you've known forever. I'm looking at a screen that is all red, and the opportunities are abundant. My only problem is I'm going to have to narrow it down from 400 companies that look good. And that's my biggest problem right now is where am I going to deploy it all, the cash we have? And we have plenty of cash to do this.
A lot of people don't, though. I mean, even the president said it was a buying opportunity, and then it became one. In fact, Congress is investigating or considering an investigation of that, as the president and maybe some others were able to cash in on the drop and then the rise in the market. But never mind that for a minute. For the people who just don't have the money to invest right now, what do you suggest they do? How do they minimize their losses?
Well, what you do at this point, just if you need to move, make a lateral move, maybe upgrade your position, because they seem to be pricing everything at the same level today and not distinguishing between the better companies, maybe make some lateral moves in your portfolio and upgrade the quality of your company if they're both down. You could look at that side of it and maybe switch from a company without a dividend to one that is.
Yeah.
You have to really go through it with a fine-tooth comb and take your time and say, okay, if I can get this company at the same price as this one in terms of investing, but it's really an upgrade for me, and it'll probably come back at a better pace and a better future, that's when you make those lateral moves.
Is it also safe to say, though, that if you can stay in the market, stay in the market? I know some people have RMDs, or they just need to cash in, or they're so afraid they can't resist cashing in. But is your advice in general to don't capture those losses yet?
I mean, losses, you have a tendency to capture closer to the end of the year for tax purposes. I would just say if you're going to make a lateral move and upgrade your position, that's something to consider doing, right? I believe investors always have some level of cash in their accounts. Money market is my term for cash. We always have a nice, healthy amount of that in our portfolios, varying from client to client for exactly this reason.
Yeah.
Having that in the portfolio is an anchor on the way up, but it's also an airbag on the way down.
Huh.
So that's what I like about it. You can do that. Another side note to give you is I think with interest rates coming down and the possibility of the extended tax cuts, M&A, which has been dead for 2 years, can really come alive, knowing how low some of these companies have got and the cost of borrowing.
Mergers and acquisitions.
Cheap.
Yeah, right.
Oh, M&A has been dead for 2 years. I think you could see a lot of that once we get through this uncertainty, and there will be a day that we're through it. That could really light a fire, and that could really trigger the market to go higher.
Here's another nice number. Inflation came in better than expected, and now we're out of time. That's Stephen Esposito, president of Yellowstone Wealth Management in Lake Forest. Click on YellowstoneWM.com. Stephen, thanks for your help today.
Thank you.
Bree Fowler, senior writer at CNET.com. Bree, let's start with Microsoft and this giant data center they were going to build in Ohio. We have a lot of cheerful talk in Illinois about data centers coming here as well. What are you reporting on there?
Well, Microsoft says it's going to slow or pause some of its data center construction, and that includes a $1 billion project in Ohio. It's a sign maybe for the industry that artificial intelligence, which has been boosting demand for these kinds of data centers, that the needs for that might be actually slowing a little bit.
Why would the need be slowing?
It's lots of capacity is coming in as far as data centers go. Maybe they're not getting used as fast. Maybe they're thinking they don't need these investments right away. I mean, this is one of those things where, you know, it just hit the ground so fast.
Mm.
Companies might be taking a beat now, especially, you know, they don't mention it, but the economy is a little uncertain right now. When it comes to investing, you know, I think a lot of companies are kind of looking at what they want to do.
It did sound, though, like you were suggesting this wasn't relative to the markets of the last week, but rather just an anticipation of lower demand in general.
Right. This is a new frontier. This is new territory for all kinds of companies. And obviously, you want to have more capacity than need. But at the same time, you know, this is a lot of money that we're talking about. I mean, the project in Ohio is $1 billion by itself. That's a lot to invest, and you don't want to do it unless you need to.
I wonder if that's actually not a terrible thing, in that maybe it won't be great for Ohio, but that also means less demand on the electrical grid, the water resources. It would seem foolish to maybe champion a downsizing of a project, but those are also great consumers of energy and resources too, right?
Yeah, exactly. And energy costs money, and you don't want to be spending it on that if you don't need to. And, you know, people also, if you talk to economists, these data centers don't actually employ that many people.
Right.
They're basically
right.
Giant warehouses. So the economic impact on a community is not as great as if, you know, it was making auto parts or something along those lines.
Talk to me about Instagram for kids. What's their latest development?
Well, they are rolling out more protections for teenagers. Under the changes that are coming now, Instagram users that are under 16 won't be able to live stream or unblur, you know, nudity or other kind of questionable content in direct messages without getting their parents' approval first. This is part of a bunch of changes that they've been rolling out at Meta, and that includes new safeguards for things like Facebook and Messenger, too.
Does that work? I mean, it seemed to me like a lot of those protections kids would find workarounds. Talk about that.
Well, you really have to take initiative as a parent and make sure that you set up their account with them, because unless you have it flagged as a teen account in the first place and have yourself, you know, connected as a parent, these safeguards aren't really going to kick in. I have a teenager, I have a kid too, and they're both on Instagram. And, you know, I need to, as a parent, go in there and, you know, make those decisions and put those controls in place, or, you know, they really don't do any good.
Yeah. Speaking of kids, well, really everybody, TikTok has got another reprieve of a few months, right?
Yep. Thankfully, that came down fairly early on Friday. Some of us were kind of worried that it was going to drag out again and we were going to have TikTok go dark and things like that. And there's been a lot of talk as to, you know, what is going to happen with that. I mean, there are rumors that they were close to a deal and then all the tariff drama kicked in and China got angry and backed out.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is kind of just kicking the can down the road a little bit. Another 75 days.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens.
Well, that road may got longer today when it was just revealed. I mean, if you do the calculations, the 125% tariff on China is actually 145%. That's telling China we don't want anything you are selling. and in the same breath, we're going to ask them to sell us TikTok. This really does complicate that, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, if only we could put a tariff on social media accounts. But yeah, it definitely, it's crazy. I don't know how they think American consumers can live without everything coming from China or having that be affordable, because so much stuff comes from there now. Companies are going to have to make some tough decisions.
Consumers, too. I'm going to put a tariff on tariffs so that the next tariff will be so expensive they won't have a tariff. I don't know what I just said. That's Bree Fowler, a senior writer at CNET. It's always good to hear you. Thank you, Bree.
Thanks for having me.
You hear those commercials sometimes for Jeff Buys Your House. Jeff is in our studio. That would be Jeff Neidiger to you and me, the co-founder and innovator of Jeff Buys Your House. Welcome back to our show. How are you?
John, awesome to be here. Thank you so much.
It says a veteran-led team, by the way. What does that mean?
Veteran-led team. I had the privilege of serving our great country in Iraq and Afghanistan, 2003 to 2005. And learned quite a bit as a young man right into our nation's military, our army, actually.
How old were you when you served?
I signed up at 18 and then went in. What they said was, well, September 11th just occurred, and you're the first round to go to Iraq in 2003. So I did that, came home, was getting to go to Ranger School, and then they said, stop, you're not doing any of that. You're going back to Afghanistan. So I spent, and I was married at the time, spent about 30 months deployed, and that'll grow you up pretty quick. And it's taught me a few things along the way, and I'm able to now use some of that through our business leadership.
Sounds a little cliche to say that in the service you will learn a lot of things that will benefit you in life, but you just brought that up. What do you mean? Like, how do you employ the things you learned in the military and the private sector?
Yeah, I think it's really applicable, although you've got to be careful because there's some extreme situations when you're in the military, right? There's a lot of it is life and death. Not necessarily always the case in business, but it's really still about people. Whether you're commanding a team in combat in a real wartime situation, or you're commanding a team leading people in the conference room or the boardroom, it's a lot of the same stuff. Casting a vision, making sure people are bought into that and getting behind you, and then I try and take the approach of being a go-first leader, getting out in front and going after it.
Huh. But when you left for the military, you evidently didn't have a long work history. So what made you, coming out of the service, decide to go into this crazy business of yours?
Yeah. Well, I don't have a great answer. It's not really the answer, truthfully, is what I wanted after the military was the freedom and flexibility. And I felt like going into business for myself. And I thought, you know what, how could I use some of my skills on being a good salesperson, being a good human connector, I knew the construction world and I really liked real estate. I didn't realize how much money it took to buy houses at the time. You don't know those things when you're 21 or 23, but I kind of put those two together, bought a few houses, remodeled a few houses. Actually, the first house was out in Dixon, Illinois, so we're quite a ways from there, but bought it, renovated it myself.
So you were a flipper.
House flipper, yep, started, but I did it all.
What were you buying and borrowing for those houses then?
Dollar amount, how much?
Yeah, say.
That first house was right around $40,000, you believe it. And that was the only place I could afford a place.
But that was all the rage for a while. All the TV shows, everybody seemed to be knowing how to make money at the
time. That's really how we got into it. When I was in Afghanistan, I remember we had a little bit of TV and there was a few shows that were kind of popular at the time. I thought, I could do that.
So you bought it for 40, you put in 20, and you sold it for 70, something like that?
Sold it for $78,000 back to the person that I bought it from. He said, this will make a perfect rental. You've actually over-improved it. Perfect, I'll take it.
And did a light go on then?
I thought, what if we did this twice a month or three times and now 30 or 40 times a month?
Is that what you're doing now, though? I mean, you're not necessarily completely rehabbing houses, are you?
Many of the projects that we buy, so we're obviously buying houses directly from the homeowner.
This is Jeff from jeffbuysyourhouse.com. Keep going.
Yeah, and so we are typically buying that house that's fairly used for the most part, 1950s, 60s, 70s. It's Chicago, right? It's an older community, especially in the suburbs. And so we're adding value, improving these properties, and then going back to the market and reselling it for more. And then a new homeowner gets to come in, and kind of the process starts over again.
So you're not just cleaning, because part of the commercial says you don't even have to clean out the house. So I would imagine somebody's passed away or somebody's got to move or there's some circumstance that would put a home on the market that's not of great value, it's not ready to sell. You would come in, clean it up, maybe throw some paint in there. You're making it sound like you do more than that, though.
Yeah, and every situation and every house is unique. So we will look at every property, and we're not trying to apply the exact same thing to every house, but you're right. Some of these properties need some loving, let's say. So we're going to come in and decide, does it really need paint and carpet and a new front door, and then we put it back on the market? Or does it need to be gutted down to the studs, fully permitted, opened up kitchen like kind of you see on TV? And we do all of the above. We've got a full construction department that does that.
So would you say there's a typical job, and maybe there isn't, but describe for me something that is fairly routine for you.
Fairly routine would be buying and then the easier things for us, because we do so much of it, would be, like you said, paint and flooring. It smells nice. It looks nice. It's very visual. New countertops, that type of stuff. So it's a quick value add to us and to the end user. And then we're going back to the market, and someone's got to get a loan for this property, and they don't want to go to the Home Depot and do all the work. They're looking for something they can move in.
But they may make some cosmetic changes, too, or some decisions on their own.
Yeah.
But
our strategy there, John, is to price the end sale accordingly so that a homeowner can buy it for themselves at a price that's reasonable to the market. We're selling quite a bit under value for even the end buyer. But that all starts with, working with the right homeowners on buying the houses from them.
But aren't you also buying under market? I mean, because you have to put cost in it, too. So how do you justify your business model to the seller, since they might think they might get more on the open market?
Yeah, it's a great question. We actually don't really justify it, quite honestly. We just tell them that they've called us for a reason. As you've heard the advertisement, they call us and say, you know what, we don't want to do the repairs. We don't want, we actually need to hit an exact time frame. We can't guess if the house will sell in May or in June or August 15th. Could you buy the house on June 9th at 3 p.m.? So that we can sell and then move to be with our grandkids in Texas. That is very common. These are not distressed situations.
Huh.
This is not necessarily a house that needs a lot of work. Mm. It's more about the actual scenario that the homeowners are in to say, I need the speed, the convenience, and can you buy it as is? We've got a lot of stuff we've accumulated over 40 years.
How often do these houses still have mortgages attached to them?
I would say it's probably 50-50, yeah. But most of the folks, I mean, look at the real estate run-up in the last couple of years. A lot of folks are sitting on equity. And so it really becomes a financial decision for them, and they can decide if they want to go to the full retail market, which I would say if it's in their best, if it's best for their family to sell retail for highest dollar amount and they don't need to hit a time frame, then we're saying it's probably best for you to do that.
Fair enough. But I ask that because if it's on the market for a few months and they're making mortgage payments, you could just discount that price every month, and suddenly your cash offer is probably getting more attractive by the minute.
Yes, good point. So that is probably a little more of the comparison as to say, if you went retail, what would it be versus if you went and sold to us directly, where we pay all the closing costs, we're going to pay your, we're going to bring everything up to speed to get everything sold. Now, you've got a tax payment a couple times a year you've got to make. A lot of these things we can incorporate into the deal and make sure that we're fair and reasonable with our offer. And then you get the option with kind of a no obligation appointment that we come out and visit you in your home in your living room and sit with you for a while, see what you need.
Makes me wonder what your return rate is. So when somebody calls, how often do you close the deal? If you want to answer that question, answer that in a minute. That's the voice of Jeff, the co-founder and innovator at JeffBuysYourHouse.com, and we'll continue with him in a minute. Right now, though, let's get you another business update with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A big Chicago accounting and consulting firm is working on a merger that could push it into the industry's top 10. Baker Tilly is in talks to merge with Seattle-based Moss Adams, according to multiple reports. If the deal goes through, it would create the sixth largest accounting and consulting firm with more than $3 billion in annual billings. Baker Tilly hasn't commented on the reports by the Wall Street Journal and Financial Times. The firm has a professional staff of nearly 500 people. The company that runs the Emily Hotel in Chicago's Fulton Market is planning to open a new restaurant in the Loop. Cranes reports Ani Group is eyeing the ground floor of 225 West Randolph for the restaurant, which will be called Solette. Its opening is set for June. The menu will include modern, eclectic, and global flavors. Solette will serve lunch, dinner, and have a happy hour. Ani opened its first restaurant, Dial Tone Coffee and Wine Bar, in Chicago's Old Town earlier this year. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
What about the business of food, Steve Alexander?
Yeah, thank you. And as we often do, we like to shine a light on new businesses of food. And the newest addition to Wrigleyville is Bar 19, 3438 North Clark, where Outpost used to be. Maurice Jackson is head chef of Bar 19.
Our grand opening is April 15th. That's our target date.
You may already know Maurice as the Wing King of Wrigleyville.
A festival here every year called the Wing Out Fest. And I've won back-to-back 2023 and 2024, so I'm going for the three-peat this year.
And when Bar 19 opens next week, wings will certainly be on the menu, but so will Kopi, the brand name for what we used to call carp, the ones that fly out of the Illinois River when boats go by.
Whoa!
I just got whacked in the back of the head.
And the taste of Kopi is nothing like you may associate with flying carp. More about that and Bar 19 after I thank the Chevy Silverado for sponsoring us today. There has never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDrivesChicago.com. Kopi, spelled C-O-P-I, the new name for Asian carp, because there are copious amounts of the fish in our rivers, and keeping them out of Lake Michigan depends in large part on you eating them. Chef Maurice Jackson of Bar 19 likes Kopi a lot.
It's a savory, clean fish. If you compare it to tilapia, it's got much more flavor. And if you compare it to catfish, it's much cleaner.
And at a recent food expo put on by the state of Illinois,
I did loaded Kopi nachos. That was a hit. We did a Kopi Buddha Poke Bowl, and that was amazing. And we also did a Kopi chili, and we also displayed a Kopi dip.
And if you need more convincing about Kopi,
that it's more like turkey or ground beef when you cook with it. So you can use the Kopi fish for burgers, crumbles, like spaghetti, pasta. It's a very diverse fish. That's what I like about the Kopi fish, and it's really tasty.
Chef Maurice Jackson at the soon-to-be-open Bar 19 in Wrigleyville.
Right now, we're shooting for April 15th.
He'll be serving up what he calls elevated bar food with custom smash burgers, including Kopi smash burgers. And as we've heard before here from a state of Illinois official trying to keep the carp out of Lake Michigan, eating Kopi allows you to
eat well, do good.
I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
We've been talking with Jeff Neidiger. He is the co-founder and innovator at JeffBuysYourHouse.com here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Business, you said to me off the air, has been good, right?
Business has been good. Yeah, the real estate industry around in and around the Chicago and Chicago suburbs is always dynamic. We're in a Midwest market, so you don't see a lot of the peaks and troughs. It's pretty stable from my standpoint. But you've got a lot of people that want to sell, and you got a lot of people that want to buy. And Chicago is still an economic hub.
The way we talk about real estate here is relative to inventory and markets and interest rates. Some of those aren't your concerns because you're the cash buyer, right?
We are the cash buyer. I'm not necessarily concerned about what my borrowing rate is. So we're going to come in and pay cash for the house. And it's not something that I get too worked up about, although we are a home seller as well. So I do care when we go to the market to sell the house.
Because you want me to be able to afford that house that you're going to put on the market.
That's right.
I may have to borrow money. But boy, everybody's starving for inventory. It would seem to me like you would be in the driver's seat if you're putting improved properties on the market. So the last month was good?
Yeah, I think we bought 30 or 35 houses last month all around Chicagoland. And then again, we're selling 30 or 35 houses a month. So it's a lot of new inventory coming to the market, which brings a whole new slew of buyers and real estate brokers and lenders and
appraisers.
What's
the range, cheapest to most expensive, that you would typically tackle?
We'll buy just about anything, but it just happens to fall in the purchase price around $150,000 all the way up to maybe $450,000, $500,000. And a sale price in about the same range. But most of these areas, we're well below the median sale price. $350,000, $400,000 sale price, which is still a pretty good bang for your buck in most areas.
Wait a minute, but what's the math on that? So $350,000, you bought it for less.
Yeah.
And then put it on the market at that price.
Yeah, $350,000 would be oftentimes the sale price that we're bringing to the market on a renovated piece of property.
847, just by the way, texted in and said, Jeff Buys Your House is a fantastic company. They saved my sanity. What is that all about?
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I was actually looking at one of our reviews, and I'm not sure who said that. That's pretty awesome. Thank you for that. But I think a lot of times there's not always a difficult situation. A lot of people aren't always in distress. Some people just, like I said, want to hit the time frame. They want the ease and the speed and the convenience. And I think a lot of times they want the certainty of working with a professional team that has been doing this a long time, and that we are going to do what we say we're going to do. We're going to execute, and I think that maybe you can save some sanity by not having to go through all those hoops when some of these housing situations can be difficult ones.
Oh, they say buying and selling a home is, next to a divorce and death, the most stressful things. That's not a joke, right? That's the most stressful time of your life.
It is stressful, and imagine how that's compounded when life's circumstances throw you a curveball. A family member passes away, or there's a divorce, or some type of family dynamic that gets difficult. How do you bring someone in that can work with you throughout that entire scenario? And we've got the team that is built for that. That's why people decide they want to sell their house to us, because we're going to stay in there and work with them. Not everything is a two-week close. Sometimes they want to close in 2 weeks, and it ends up being a month because the structure of the property or the title or the family scenario is messy. And who's going to be there to work all that out? It's our team.
But I know instances where people are trying to sell their house and the buyer now has a finance problem, or it's contingent. And again, you aren't having to worry about that. You guys have been doing this for 18 years. How many people do you employ? How many people are in your business?
There are around 30 team members now, to include myself and my business partner.
And you're throughout the Chicagoland area?
All the way up to the Wisconsin border and Northwest Indiana, all the way out to, let's say, DeKalb, but probably five or six, seven counties of what we call Chicagoland, yeah.
Do you have a business plan larger than this? You're expanding?
I don't currently see a need to expand beyond Chicagoland. A lot of folks will go out to different markets. We like here. We live here. Our kids go to school here. We go to church here. We're invested here for a long time, and we're in a huge market, and there's a big need for what we do.
What's the skill that's hardest for you to replace? Is it construction guys? Is it appraisers? Is it decorators? What's the talent that is most desirable for you?
Man, that's a really good question. We've actually been very, very fortunate filling our team with really high quality people. I think if you do good business, then whether you're an outside vendor or a third party or someone that's going to work on our team, if you continue to treat people well, you cast a vision that they can buy into, and of course compensate, pay on time, et cetera, just treat like a really good human, then it's not hard to build a team.
One last thing, we're running out of time. Jeff buys your house. Jeff sells your house too then. If I go to your website, is there an inventory of what you have on the market?
No, that's a good question. Everything that we buy and typically renovate will end up on the real estate market. So it'll be on the open MLS for sale.
Yeah, right. And you said March was one of your better months, right?
March was the best month in, 17, almost 18 years. Yeah, we're thankful for that.
Imagine that. Jeff, you're always interesting to talk to. It's such a leap that you took coming out of the service. It's good to see somebody around town doing it right. Jeff Neidiger is the co-founder and innovator at jeffbuysyourhouse.com. Thanks for coming in.
John, pleasure. Thank you.